When we talk about feminism today, what exactly are we fighting for? While mainstream feminist conversations revolve around corporate leadership, gender pay gaps, and personal expression, millions of women face far more urgent challenges. Will my children eat tonight? Can I access healthcare? Will I survive domestic violence? In Hood Feminism, Mickey Kendall exposes a profound disconnect between what privileged women want and what marginalized women desperately need. Growing up on Chicago's South Side, Kendall experienced firsthand how mainstream feminism consistently fails those most vulnerable. The movement that claims to help all women has instead prioritized the concerns of the privileged few, creating a feminism that feels irrelevant, even harmful, to those struggling with basic survival. What happens when the sisterhood you're told to trust repeatedly demonstrates it doesn't see your struggles as feminist issues? When solidarity becomes conditional on your silence? Hunger is a daily reality shaped by structural inequities. After escaping an abusive marriage, Kendall relied on public assistance to raise her son. What she remembers most isn't triumph, but hunger, crying over an unaffordable Christmas tree and fearing she'd lose her child because she couldn't provide. Society treats hunger as a moral failing rather than a systemic issue. We judge mothers on food assistance while ignoring impossible circumstances: food deserts, multiple jobs leaving no time to cook, and neighborhoods where only gas stations and fast food provide sustenance. The numbers are stark. 42 million Americans face hunger, with women and children comprising over 70% of the nation's poor. Safety net programs fall short. In Illinois, a single parent with one child receives maximum TANF benefits of just $412 monthly. SNAP faces constant criticism despite fraud occurring in less than 1% of cases. When legal living wages aren't available, some turn to desperate measures. Mainstream feminism fails when it prioritizes respectability politics over acknowledging that choosing between starvation and crime isn't really a choice. Be twice as good to get half as far captures the exhausting demands of respectability politics on Black women, the pressure to police their appearance, speech, and behavior to counter racist stereotypes. Black women must monitor their tone to avoid being labeled angry, suppress reactions to racism for professionalism, and carefully manage their appearance to be taken seriously. Yet respectability provides no protection. Civil rights activists in their Sunday best faced violence, and professional attire didn't prevent discrimination. This constant self-policing creates chronic stress and health issues, while the pressure to be twice as good takes a severe mental toll. Kendall's experience with family members praising lighter skin exposed how colorism operates within Black communities. As a brown-skinned woman with African features, she's faced both internal beauty hierarchies and white-centric standards, often receiving backhanded compliments like "pretty for a Black girl." While conventional attractiveness grants certain privileges, it creates unique challenges for Black women: increased sexual harassment, victim blaming, and unrealistic grooming standards. These double standards affect everything from career opportunities to criminal sentencing. Black girls don't have eating disorders, you see, except when they do. This powerful statement captures a devastating paradox in mental health care. Kendall's high school eating disorder went unnoticed, while teachers praised her self-control, their responses shaped by stereotypes about Black women's bodies. Marginalized girls face the same psychological struggles as their privileged peers, but with fewer resources and a culture that denies their suffering. For young people of color, puberty becomes especially challenging as they confront white beauty standards that frame their natural features as wrong. The racial wealth gap limits access to protective resources like therapy, while healthcare providers often dismiss symptoms in patients of color. Though eating disorders affect all demographics, treatment protocols remain centered on white, middle-class experiences. For people of color, body image extends beyond aesthetics. It impacts employment, housing access, and law enforcement interactions. Finding culturally competent providers who understand these intersecting challenges becomes another barrier to recovery. Be twice as good to get half as much. This mantra echoes through Black households, demanding perfection as the price of dignity. Respectability politics force Black women to police their appearances, speech, and behavior to avoid racist stereotypes. Yet these efforts offer no real protection. Even civil rights activists in their Sunday best faced violence, and professionals in suits still encounter discrimination. Kendall experienced colorism within her family, where lighter skin was praised. As a brown-skinned woman with African features, she's navigated both internal community beauty standards and white-centric aesthetics that manifest in backhanded compliments like, "pretty for a Black girl." The emotional toll is crushing. Black women must monitor their tone to avoid being labeled angry, suppress reactions to racism to appear professional, and carefully curate their appearance, leading to chronic stress and health issues. Meanwhile, white women freely adopt Black aesthetic features without experiencing discrimination, and courts continue to uphold workplace discrimination against traditional Black hairstyles while white influencers profit from the same styles. Being an ally represents only a surface-level commitment, while true accomplices recognize blind spots, listen when challenged, and avoid defensiveness. Rather than listing past good deeds when criticized, accomplices understand that growth requires uncomfortable self-examination. The shift from ally to accomplice means confronting one's discomfort and accepting that good intentions don't negate harmful impacts. Anger is a legitimate force for change. No community has ever freed itself from oppression through polite requests alone. Social media has amplified previously silenced voices, creating spaces where suppressed narratives emerge. While these platforms reveal how rage against injustice drives progress, they also expose oppression tourists who prioritize appearing woke over creating change. Meanwhile, grassroots organizers, often those with lived experience rather than privilege, continue crucial community work with minimal recognition. What would feminism look like if it centered the needs of those facing the greatest challenges? It would prioritize food security alongside reproductive rights, recognize gun violence and police brutality as feminist issues, and understand that for many women, solidarity with men against racism is as vital as challenging sexism. Hood feminism seeks to expand the movement to address the full spectrum of women's needs. When basic survival, food, shelter, safety from violence become central rather than peripheral to feminist discourse, we move closer to a movement that truly speaks for all women. The path forward requires restructuring priorities and resources, amplifying marginalized voices as leaders, and recognizing that liberation comes through collective action, not individual advancement. The question isn't whether we can afford this inclusive vision, but whether we can afford to continue without it. A feminism worth fighting for must be intersectional, recognizing that gender justice requires racial justice, economic justice, and dignity for all.